Oh, that's irritating.
There is a fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man. There is also, it turns out, a 500th podcast about the Twilight Zone. The episodes range in quality, as vast as space, and as entertaining as infinity. This one is the middle ground, between light and shadow, between science and superstition, between a podcast worth your time and a giant piece of crap. Join, if you will, Rish Outfield and his niece Cathexis as they travel into the Twilight Grown.
Hello, everyone. Welcome once again to the Twilight Grown. I am your host, Rish Outfield.
And I am Cathexis.
Cathexis, do you feel up to explaining the origin of your name today?
I do not.
Fair enough. Every episode we talk about an episode of The Twilight Zone. This one we'll be talking about is from the original series, Season 1, The After Hours. This was written by Rod Serling, directed by Douglas Hayes. June 10th, 1960, it aired. I guess they hadn't gotten the idea of summer reruns yet. What episode did it say it was of the first season?
34?
I think it was 34. There were 36 episodes in the first season, which is amazing. Well, Cathexis, tell us, if you can remember, the story of The After Hours.
It starts out with a very nice-looking woman, and she's heading into a department store looking for a singular, what are they called? Thimble?
Yes.
Which, I'll get to that later. That's weird to me. You go to a department store for a thimble. But she was doing that. She was looking for a very particular gold thimble. She is waiting for the elevator. Very nice man. I can't remember what do they call the men in the elevator?
The elevator operator.
Yeah. One of those, he was there, and he strangely took only her into the elevator with him. And she mentioned this to him, and he said, this is the express elevator to the 9th floor. And he asked her what she needed, and she told him, and he said, well, that would be in specialties, which I guess is the 9th floor. The elevator operator, you could tell, wasn't super friendly. Like, he wasn't the most social person. He was a little bit cold to her, and she was very bubbly, and he kind of acted like he didn't like that. So that was something that I noticed that was strange about him. But she gets to the floor, and in the middle of her saying, there's nothing on this floor, he shuts the elevator door behind her. So now she's wandering through this floor, not seeing anything, and then a woman pops out from behind the counter and says, can I show you something? Can I help you with anything? And so...
Her name was Marcia, the girl.
Marcia. The clerk, or the, I guess the clerk, right?
Sure.
Ends up giving her the gold thimble, which is the only thing on the floor in a little glass case. And she calls her by her name, which she never told her. And our character, Marcia, does not like that. So she confronts her about it. And the clerk, oh, she said, I must have seen you in the store before. So Marcia says, I've never seen you before, so no, you haven't seen me here. And then she turns to leave, and the clerk says, Mrs. White, or Miss White, are you happy? And Marcia really does not like that. She turns around and says, that's none of your business. And the clerk does this strange, theatrical, like, dramatic scene where she says, what does she say? She says, beg my pardon or something. It's none of my business. Well, then it's none of my business. She kind of just leaves it at that. So the elevator comes back randomly. Marcia gets back on, and it cuts to her in the elevator with this man, the elevator operator, and she says it's scratched. The thimble, she notices, is dented and scratched. So she's very upset. She's trying to show the elevator operator, and he just does not care whatsoever. At all. So he just says, complaints are on floor 3. So he takes her there. She gets out. So this floor is not like the other one. It's not empty. It's not desolate. There are things. There are people, real people there. It's a floor of the store. So she goes in, and I guess she ends up talking to a manager of sorts, and he is very flamboyant.
Good word.
And he can't give her the answer she wants. He goes to the, what was he, the...
General manager.
General manager. And he's telling him, you know, I've told her there's no way that she could have gone there, you know, but she keeps insisting she didn't get it from the gift shop. And the general manager stands up, all dramatic, like, zooms in, and he says, well, I hope you told her there's no ninth floor. And it just goes on where this manager that wasn't able to satisfy her is telling his boss that he needs to go, and she's so upset, and she needs a new thimble, and she's crazy. So they both go out, and she's standing there, and they're trying to explain to her, you know, that's not possible, it's hard to understand because there's no ninth floor. And she gets a puzzled look on her face, and then she says, that's her, that's the woman that helped me, because you can see the hairstyle that the woman was wearing from the back. And then another worker turns it around, and it is in fact a mannequin. So she either faints or freaks out. Somehow she falls asleep. They put her in a back room with an employee watching her, and one of the managers says, after he states that she's crazy again, says, you need to go tell her we're closing, and tomorrow we will give her a refund or whatever she wants. And this employee has a customer, so I assume that she just completely forgot to go and get her. So Marcia is left in the store on this floor all alone. She can't get out. She's freaking out. She comes out of the room, and she notices she's all alone, and then there are mannequins. And very slowly, she starts noticing that they're strange, and one of them starts moving, and she loses her mind, and then backs up into the elevator very dramatically, hysterically just sobbing and screaming. The elevator door shuts, and it takes her to the ninth floor, which does not exist. While she's hysterically freaking out in the elevator, she gets to the floor, and the doors open, and it is the clerk that does not exist, but in mannequin form. And she comes to life, and Marcia is hysterical still, and this mannequin slash clerk slash not real person consoles her and takes her through the floor. And as they're walking, you can see each mannequin one by one slowly coming to life and moving around and walking towards them. And they form a little circle, and the clerk just keeps saying, do you remember now? We're trying to help you remember. We'll help you as much as we can. Is it all coming back to you now? And it takes a while, but finally she just says, I'm a mannequin. And it turns out that it was her turn to go out and live amongst real people for a month, but she was overdue by a day. She didn't come back. So she ended up taking the time out of this clerk's vacation time. Yeah. She was one of them the entire time. She just did not remember. And so it ends with the clerk taking her turn and leaving and saying her goodbyes. And then one of the man mannequins, he says, did you have a good time? Or what did he say?
Did you have fun?
Did you have fun? And what did she say? Ever so much fun. And she says, ever so much fun. And then she freezes in like a mannequin position, and that was it.
Well, that wasn't exactly it. You've got to describe the very final moment of the episode where the flamboyant floor manager, if you will,
I don't like him,
he walks out, and he's chatting with all of the employees, you know, oh, I expect $100 out of you today. And, oh, how is your powder? Is it dry? And, oh, break it up, ladies. You've got customers. We're about to open. And then he passes the mannequin of Marcia. And what does he do?
He looks dead into the camera for about 35 seconds and then turns around and then just kind of shakes it off like, no. So then that's the
that,
end.
Then that's there, the end. I had to point that out because this guy, maybe we should talk about this guy. I want to talk about the episode, but
no,
it's just like he overshadows this whole episode, doesn't he?
So, like, he took over the entire thing. It was so calm and suspenseful, and then there's this guy, this flamboyant man in a women's beauty store taking the show. Yeah, when people were watching that in early 60s, right? You said it was made in
1960. Yeah, it came out.
So were people watching that and going, oh, gay?
No, I think that he was probably a comedian and he was doing his shtick, his vaudevillian, you know, project to the back row kind of performance. But it's like we were watching Othello or some Shakespeare performance and everybody's all passionate. It's all royal Shakespearean actors. And then Jack Black steps out and he does his normal, it's a, you know, this is for the kids on Nickelodeon performance.
It was so strange. He just like, it was so much louder than everyone else.
And yeah, three times I caught him looking at the camera.
Yes, me too.
And that is just weird. Rod Serling wasn't in this episode. Normally, you know, he's the only one that's allowed to look at the camera because he's the storyteller. But he mugged for the camera.
He did.
It made Jim Carrey at his worst seem subtle.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it overpowers the rest of the episode. I wanted to ask you what you thought of the episode, apart from the guy.
I was really hoping this was the episode that I thought it was. I saw it, I don't even know how long ago, probably over 10 years ago, and it scared me a lot. It really scared me. I watched it when I was home alone at night. It was just on one of the higher channels that showed, what's the channel that shows like, it was like the late night showing of Twilight Zone. And it really scared me, which I don't think it's that hard to make something inanimate that looks like that frightening, you know, like a doll. But I really like this episode. I think it's very well done, and I really liked the actress in it. I don't remember her name.
Yeah, this was Anne Francis, and she was a fairly famous actress from the era. She was in a Western, which she played the title character, Honey West. She was. And then she was most famous for being the girl in Forbidden Planet. And I know her from the song from Rocky Horror Picture Show. And in the chorus, you know, Anne Francis stars in Forbidden Planet. Oh, 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 oh. At the late night double feature picture show.
Okay.
And when the show first started, I said, is that Anne Francis? Because she has a very doll-like
face. Oh, yeah, her eyes are huge, yeah.
And I think they probably played that up in this episode. They gave her more of a hairstyle, you know, not an elaborate hairstyle. And they probably, I mean, it's black and white, so it's hard to tell, but I felt like her face was really pale. And then she's got
caked
like
on,
a beauty mark or something right by her lips that was just black. So it looked like, it was supposed to look a little bit artificial, I think. But she has a distinctive face. She always looks like that.
Yeah.
In, I mean, maybe not as mannequin-like in everything that I've seen her in. But I didn't recognize any of the other people, especially not the guy. Like I said, I felt like he was a performer from another medium.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, this was another time, and television was more primitive. And so it may be that this guy didn't have a lot of experience with film or with the subtlety of television. I felt like their performances, aside from his, were pretty good, especially Anne Francis's. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She is required to be hysterical, and there is that moment before they go to commercial where she goes, ah!
I know.
But like when she backs away and falls down and cries in the elevator, I liked that. I thought she did a good job.
Yeah.
And it was scary. That I when we did our very first episode of this, I had asked you, you know, do you remember any of the episodes that you saw? And you said, I don't, except for one about mannequins. Yeah. And that's why I chose this one for us to watch tonight. And I wondered, did you pick up on it immediately that this is the one that I saw?
No, I did not. For some reason, all I remembered was, I mean, mannequins. I remember there was a woman, but no, as soon as it started, I was thinking, I want this to be familiar, but it's not. But I think I liked it this time more than I did the last time, just because it scared me so much.
Well, at what point did you realize that she was a mannequin? Did you remember having seen it 10 years ago, or did it still come as a surprise at the end?
I didn't remember. I don't know when I picked up on it. Probably when she starts telling the managers about the thimble and they say there's no ninth floor. That's when I was thinking, well, either like it's some sort of weird like supernatural something, or she doesn't remember. So that's when I started thinking, and I was hoping that that would be what was going on, because that's really interesting to me and also sad almost when I think about it. Like, they're not doing anything bad, they're just so intrigued with people and wanting to be like people, you know? I don't know. Am I reading into that too much?
Well, no, there's that part where the guy says, did you have fun? And she said,
yeah.
What did she say?
Ever so much fun.
Which, again, is just a way people talked, yeah. Or maybe never actually talked. It's just a dramatic way of expressing yourself. But she said, you know, for a while there, I thought that I was one of them, that I was real. And there was something sad about that, because now she has to go back to the banal life of being a mannequin.
Yeah.
And while she's saying that, her arms are slowly moving and her fingers are sort of splaying into the pose that the mannequin at the very end is going to be in. And I thought that the mannequins in this were excellent.
Oh my
especially
gosh,
the one of the clerk that said, none of my business. It looked so much more realistic than mannequins do today. And then when they cut to like regular mannequins, you could see like how much less detailed and lifelike regular mannequins were. But I really liked the two major mannequins of the clerk and of Marcia. And then my favorite shot in the whole episode is when she comes out of the elevator at the end and the ninth floor is just filled with mannequins.
Yes.
And as she's walking by, each one becomes a person.
Yeah.
And it wasn't done with special effects or anything like that. They were just frozen. And as she walked by, they unfroze. But it worked really, really well. I just assumed that some of those are going to be real mannequins and some are actors.
Too.
But they were all actors. And that was really, really cool.
That was, yeah.
Also, though, two of them were in like ski outfits with these masks. But they were like S&M
gimp
type masks. That one of them was like black with like white lips.
Yeah.
And it looked like a terrible like blackface caricature from the 1920s.
Yeah.
But both of them were terrifying.
They were very scary. That was my least favorite part. Yeah, I don't know why that was a strange choice, I guess, to add to the...
Well, they those two mannequins came from the skiware / serial killer aisle.
Yeah.
And
they were horrible.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this episode. And, you know, I came to it knowing that she was a mannequin. That's why I chose this episode, is because I hoped it would be fun to show you the one that you remembered and see how it changed. But knowing that she was a mannequin at the very beginning, I was watching for clues, watching for hints. And she's just confused. And so it doesn't, it makes, I wonder about the thimble. I wonder if the thimble had some kind of significance.
Me too.
Like maybe it was a magic thimble or whatever that gave one of them life for a month kind of thing.
It was just a very specific thing she was looking for.
But I don't know. And yeah, it was, what, $22.50?
Yeah.
Which came to $25 with tax. And this was in 1960. That seems like so much money.
And
for
where did
a thimble.
She get the money? The cash? That's
she just had
I...
it in her purse, but... If she's going out and living for a month, like in an apartment, and, you know, she's got to have a budget for clothes and for food and going to the movies and whatever people did in 1960, I imagine that there's a fund that each one of them gets to partake in or set aside each month. And yeah, just that idea that every mannequin gets to be a person for a month. And then the other woman was upset because it was eating into her time, which explains the none of my business thing. It explains it a little bit more because, yeah, she was overly dramatic with that. But if, you know, it's her free time now and she's stuck being a mannequin because of this selfish girl who says that it's none of her business. I think I can understand that. I liked that woman too.
Oh, me too.
There was something off from the very moment we saw her. And I wonder if that was a conscious performance or if they cast somebody that just had an odd quality to her. Like every word that she said was just a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
And the way that she stood, she didn't move her arms much at all when she spoke.
Stiff, yeah.
And people don't do that. People are loose. People gesture when they talk and all that. And surely they asked her to tone all that down.
Mm-hmm.
But you pick up on it that there is something wrong with this woman. And then, yeah, the elevator repair guy, he came off as just standoffish and kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, look at this thimble. It's dented. It's like somebody stepped on it. And he won't even look down.
No, he won't even turn around.
So, yeah, maybe they had directed him to be a little bit more weird, too. But it just came off as, this is not a very pleasant guy.
Yeah.
Whereas the other woman, there was something malevolent about her.
Yeah.
I think she was meant to be scary.
Yeah.
And then a part that you didn't talk about, which I'm sure would have scared the crap out of you as a kid, and I probably scared me as a little boy, was when she's alone in the department store after waking up and there's all these mannequins and they start saying her name.
Oh, I didn't even...
They go, Marcia, 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 come here, Marcia, or remember Marcia or whatever. And that was really cool because they use real mannequins. They just show the faces, these dead faces of mannequins,
no
but
emotion.
You hear the voice. Really, really good stuff. I like this episode a lot.
Yeah, that was frightening. Yeah, just the... I guess stoicness of and everything, just nothing there. And I feel like the mannequins after they came to life, the actors were also like that. Like they definitely weren't well socialized, I guess you could say. They were just all very like the clerk was excited when she got to leave, but still it was just kind of sad. Like they just all were kind of emotionless.
Well, that idea, there is something super sad about that, that they're not real, but they get to pretend to be real. Like you know, I don't know. I think if I concentrated hard enough, I could think of other stories that are like that, other parallels.
Yeah.
But right now, none are coming to me. You know, it's something like a mermaid type story where one night of the year, or a Persephone who has to spend half of her life in the underworld and half of her life in the surface world. But yeah, an idea of somebody that gets to become a person for one day or one month in this case, but the rest of the time it's just prison or something like that. There is something awful about that. Apparently they did remake this episode in the 1980s.
Oh, really?
Revival. They called that the new Twilight Zone. And I'd make you watch that if it were available. I just typed into the computer The Twilight Zone, and this is all that came up. But there have been four different shows called The Twilight Zone. It's strange that it didn't bring up any of the others.
I guess it just assumes.
But the thing that I read about the 1980s version is that it hints that all of us are mannequins. And eventually our time will come to go back to being mannequins. And I wonder if they could pull that off. That makes me curious. I want to see that episode just to see. Because what a messed up idea. Or is it? Is there anything else you want to say about it?
No, I really enjoyed the episode. I thought it was very well done and disturbing and flamboyant.
Who would you cast as that guy today?
Oh my gosh, who's the most obnoxious person? I don't know. I guess you said Jim Carrey, so but that would be no. I don't know.
He's not as wild as he used to be. somebody, when you use the word flamboyant, of course, that means something different than now than it did in 1960. But when you said flamboyant, I thought, oh, okay, so she goes to complain and RuPaul is behind the counter.
Yes. RuPaul.
what's his name? Tyler Perry as Medea is the head of the complaints department.
That's good. That's very good. I thought of, and what's the guy's name? He's very obnoxious looking and kind of short, and he has this super high-pitched voice. Just, like, nasally annoying. You know what I'm talking about?
Can you do an impression of him?
No. He's a very high-pitched, nasally voice.
But you don't know from what? Is he an old guy? Is it, like, Joe Pesci? Or is he a younger guy?
Yeah. Oh, that's gonna bug me. Man, I can't remember. But he's very obnoxious. That's what I'm trying to get at. He's very extra.
I just heard that's millennial slang term.
Oh, you would like that.
This month. I'd never heard that before. Apparently there are three or four that I'd never heard before. And extra. I don't have a problem with that one. I think that's kind of cute.
Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh!
That's who
does this woman, and she won't stop complaining.
Yes.
She says there's a ninth floor, but everybody knows there's only eight floors.
Yes, Mr. Gottfried, thank you for explaining.
I need to tell you, this woman was very annoying.
You would know, Mr. Gottfried.
Oh, she's terrible.
Sorry. Anyhow, thank you for joining us for another episode of The Twilight Groan. Is there anything else you want to say about this?
No. I hope you enjoy.
Okay, and we've been asked to tease the upcoming episode. Is there a particular episode that you want to watch next?
Yes. But I can't remember what it's called. The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street.
Okay, so that's what's up next. The Monsters Are Due at Maple Street. Thank you. I have been Rish Outfield.
And I, Cathexis.
And skip the ninth floor.
Submitted for your approval. The Twilight Groan is produced under a Creative Commons 3.0 attribution, non-derivatives, non-commercial, black and white, topsy-turvy, non-allergenic, caffeine-free license. So download it and share it, listen to it, but don't charge for it and don't pass it off as your own. Goodbye.
And Marcia said, no, you have not. I've never seen you. Okay,
we gotta stop.
Hey, she's in Nana's room. Oh, well, I'll distract him for a minute. Okay,
you said I've never seen you.
Downstairs.
No.